Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Book Buzz. I'm your host, Susanna Greenberg. Today we have an author interview regarding the new novel, Don't Let Me Die in Disneyland by J.A. Marsan. How are you today, Mr. Marsan?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you.
We're very glad to have you here. Mr. Marsan's book, Don't Let Me Die in Disneyland, The 3D Life of Eddie LaBarena, a novel, will be published by Open Books in time for National Hispanic Heritage Month 2018, which is from September 15 to October 15. Advanced copies are already available from the publisher, which is Open Books. And the website for J.A. Marsan is juliomarsan.com. Don't Let Me Die in Disneyland, The 3D Life of Eddie LaBarena. J.A. Marsan is a graduate of Fordham University, Columbia University, and New York University. He was Poet Laureate of Queens, New York from 2004 to 2007. His novel, The Bonjour Jean, was a University of Wisconsin Press submission to the 2004 Pulitzer. And we have advanced praise from Pulitzer Prize winner Oscar Hijuelos. Marsan displays the wit and intellectual verve rarely seen in contemporary literature. And J.A. Marsan's nonfiction and poetry is widely published, including in Plowshares, Tin House, and Harper's Magazine. J.A. Marsan makes his home in Queens, New York. So welcome, J.A. Let's talk about your book, Don't Let Me Die in Disneyland, The 3D Life of Eddie LaBarena. Your title refers to Disneyland, which is a leitmotif and actually the setting of the climactic scene of the book. Can you tell us why and how did Disneyland become an intrinsic part of this novel?
Well, I'm from the generation bombarded with the first infomercials, which was at the Mickey Mouse Club. It actually was the first infomercial, which sold us the new futuristic park being built. And it also made a myth of California. So this actually produced a population shift. When I first drove across the country, the Orlando Park hadn't been built yet, and I drove to California and, of course, had to go to Disneyland. What impressed me was that it duplicated the country I had just driven across, but really just the western half. Soon after the opening of Disneyland, there was a new theme park that opened in the Bronx called Freedomland, which actually did reproduce the actual configuration of the United States and the Four Corners. In Disneyland, the colonial period is symbolically represented by Fantasyland with its English and European inheritances of childhood fable. After that experience, I realized that Disney was only reproducing the country that was a theme park. In other words, he didn't create a theme park, he just reproduced it from the country itself. He also reproduced its traditional biases, making it inadvertently even more authentic. So today we are keenly aware that, today we're so keenly aware that the country is like a theme park. We even speak of Trump land. So for Eddie, his world was a composite of his bouncing from the diverse and contradictory lands of the theme park called America. And that's why when he refers to America, it's Disneyland.
Absolutely. Eddie's search for direction, given that he has just been divorced, also includes finding someone. On the surface, he would appear to be quite a ladies' man, but it's obvious these women characters are more than love objects. Can you elaborate?
Yeah, part of one of the things that in the sociology of our interaction between groups, one never really appreciates the fact that it really starts to affect people at puberty, particularly in Eddie's case. Eddie, he was rejected as a New Yorker from Islanders, and he's a Puerto Rican in English here. Now, what Puerto Rican means in English is a whole hodgepodge of racial, who knows what, mythified gobbledygook for us that has nothing to do with the history we know, but you got to live with it. But wherever he goes, it's a question of his not just being a Harvard lawyer, he's a Puerto Rican Harvard lawyer, or he goes to Puerto Rico, he's a New Yorker, whatever. So every woman he meets is looking at him not who he is, but what he is. So it's always this trying to find somebody who sees him and not some social category that, you know, that immediately rejects him. So that's where this constant search. There was an agent who was complaining that he met so many women and so many women involved. Didn't miss the point entirely that it didn't have to do with love objects. It had to do with finding that place. I mean, that woman was going to be a place as well, which he didn't have because he comes from nowhere. So he was looking for a place, including that place being the woman he meets, which he finally does. And so there's where those women are not just a question of love objects.
Let's see. So it's really overall exploration of identity, citizenship, country, place, home, both literal and metaphorical.
Right, because wherever he goes, on both sides of whether he goes back to Puerto Rico or he comes here, he's always this whole set of sociological evocations that glow, you know, that are kind of this kind of beach ball, this beach ring around him, wherever he's bouncing off this thing. There's never the contact with the person who is uniquely not necessarily a cliche of all those sociological things that are expected, and so. And so, therefore, he experiences the rejection of one, the rejection of the other, but he finally does find somebody. But it's that. It's always a reflection of these stigmas that come with the sociological evocations.
Let's see. Now let's talk about the setting. It's a very intriguing time and place. The novel satirizes the 70s and even the 80s in New York. With recognizable real-life characters and settings of those times, how would you assess how much has changed or evolved since then? And how would you say Eddie's tragicomic story is still timely?
Yeah, it's interesting because the characters appear, many characters there that are who are recognizable from the 70s and 80s, and Eddie at that time. A lot of the Puerto Rican community was really still first generation. And a lot of these people came and they created theater and they created cultural organizations. And actually, the Puerto Rican the post-war migration is actually a second migration. There was a first. When you think of the Cuban migration, of the first migration being more well-off, and then the second, the Mayalitos being poor, actually, the same thing happened among Puerto Ricans in reverse. The same thing actually happened among Puerto Ricans. And the pre-war was a skilled group, and they created a whole setting of what was confused with another European migration. And that's why in West Side Story, there's no racial issue in West Side Story. It's a whole ethnic issue, as if they were simply another European immigration. It was the second migration, which was racially mixed. But that they came to a setting already made for them. But a lot of those people who came in that first generation still had, they started theater and political organizations and everything. What we have now, a lot of the people died off, and nothing was followed up. Mostly what you think of Puerto Rican things are mostly youth. This youth stuff and, you know, rap stuff and stuff like that. Very little has sustained all the things that were built. And so you might not associate that scene with what's going on today. What makes it timely, of course, is that Eddie is finding himself, if he were today, in the same situation that with Trump and the world that's being created by Trump is exactly what he would have encountered when he was a kid. And so, you know, that theme hasn't changed, even though the time has changed, and even the ethnic situation had changed. But the American situation has changed drastically in a way that reinforces Eddie's plight of where to belong. He belongs in a country on the other side of a wall. So he would belong, again, nowhere. Because, I mean, as one of the things that I have a poem about a wall, about the wall, and it just begins, let's build this wall that's already there. You don't have to build a wall, it's already there. So Eddie would experience that all over again. Yeah.
Unfortunately, the theme more timely than ever, it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
And so This book is set in the fascinating times of the 70s and 80s. It sounds extremely timely for our times as well.
And I just wanted to add that the epigram of the book is a poem written by Eddie. And the title is Don't Let Me Die in Disneyland. That's where he gets the title for his memoir, which is the book, his memoir. And in it, throughout, he's saying, don't deny that I was in Disneyland. And throughout, he goes through all of Disneyland, through all the characters, and saying, I'm there, and I'm dying there, and you're not recognizing it, I am there. And he should, so that's exactly, he wrote this way back when, and he included this at the beginning of his memoir. But we're back to the same spot.
Yes. Fascinating. Again, we've been speaking with J.A. Marsan about his novel, Don't Let Me Die in Disneyland, The 3D Life of Eddie Loperena, described as a picaresque, smart, and smart-ass memoir of Harvard lawyer Eddie Loperena's New Yorkian life in the country I was offered. It's coming out in October. We have a few minutes left. Do you happen to have that poem in front of you, Don't Let Me Die in Disneyland, by any chance?
Yes, I do. I can read it to you.
Yes, why don't we close out with that? And again, I implore and highly recommend all of you read Don't Let Me Die in Disneyland, a novel by J.A. Marsan, coming out in October. And now, if you would, why don't we close out with a reading of the poem by the fictional author of this memoir, the fictional memoir, Eduardo Loperena, Don't Let Me Die in Disneyland.
Right. He published this poem in his college literary magazine. Don't Let Me Die in Disneyland, where camera posed under Donald Duck's hug and canopy beak, children don't see a cloud pirate ship of black cotton candy, where sniffing me Pluto picks me up no scent, and Goofy's too smart to trip on a speed bump he knows is just me. Don't let me die in Disneyland, where Buckskin Crockett aims his supremacy at infantry in uniformed Mexican clowns, where home from the mine Snow White's seven dwarfs all claim to be dopey and dance around hi-ho as off to death I go. Don't let me die in Disneyland, where Jiminy Cricket chirps not at all, and Pinocchio's nose stays thimble small despite his big lie, I never was there. Lost boy who lost every happy thought, who fell from his flight to Never Never Land and had to grow up. Don't let me die in Disneyland, where in gunpowder night fireworks awe blooms to illumine Cinderella Castle, but not the crossbones of a black hull, its treasure, my corpse, unseen above Main Street, as in Grand Master Tuck's A Trumpet for Scepter, Mickey Mouse leads the American parade.
Oh, fantastic. Mickey Mouse leads the American parade. Well, thank you for reading that poem by your character, Eduardo Loperena. And once again, I thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you.
The book again is Don't Let Me Die in Disneyland, a novel by J.A. Marsan. This has been Book Buzz, and thank you so much, and have a great day.
Thank you very much for having me.